Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Companies all over North America think of Fulton Systems for their thermocompressor and steam systems needs, all the way from initial design to startup to troubleshooting. For more than 90 years, Fulton Systems has helped companies keep thousands of thermocompressors operating smoothly and assisted mills with hundreds of paper machine rebuilds. Turn to Fulton Systems for steam and condensate system design, dryer suction performance audits, and consulting services on all aspects of dryer suction and condensate systems management and operations. Call us at 770-447-1400. Visit our website at fultonsystems.com.
The following column was written by Jim Thompson. This is Steve Roush, and I'll be reading this week's column for Jim. The offering title of this week's column is Energy Update, and this is what Jim has to say about that. For years, energy has been our editorial topic for December. We have covered every side of it, from science engineering, politics, and personal perception. Yet, energy always remains a fresh topic since it's so important. It has been important since the steam engine was invented well over 200 years ago. Prior to that time, energy sources, wood and coal, were used for heating, but not much else. The steam engine allowed heat sources to be turned into something very useful, rotating motion. Sometimes I think the younger generations, say those under 30, think that energy is a new discovery. At least with the comments that they make to me, it seems so. I got involved with energy when I started to work in 1970. In those days, energy consumers, motors, burners, and so forth, were still fairly simple and not very efficient. In the 48 years since that time, we have seen great gains in energy efficiency from production to transmission to final consumer. This was driven by politics and controlled by powerful forces. The first oil shock in the fall of 1973 drove companies to create positions such as Energy Czar and others. Today it would be hard to find an Energy Czar. Several things have happened. Raw energy costs have fallen back to nearly the level they were back in 1973 when adjusted for inflation. In 1973, we were afraid that the OPEC would dictate the prices for energy everywhere. Today, OPEC is a paper tiger. Energy extraction has gotten much cheaper, that is fracking, and energy reserves are more abundant. Boilers, generators, and all other equipment on the production side has greatly improved, now working at efficiency levels never seen before, and at turndown ratios unprecedented in history. On the consumer side, motors are much more efficient, smaller, and less wasteful than ever. Other consumers, such as dryers, coils, spargers, and so forth, are better than ever, too. The science of energy is constant. Our abilities to convert one form of energy into another obeys the laws of physics, too, but we have gotten much better at the conversion process, that is efficiency. The uncertainty is always the politics of energy, and now the politics of energy coupled with environmental perceptions and policies. As I write this, there are major riots in Paris due to the imposition of new carbon taxes. Carbon taxes are, of course, related to energy. Energy continues to remain a fascinating agglomeration of the four P's: physics, politics, perceptions, and price. For this reason, it is always a fascinating subject impacting us all. In coming weeks, we'll delve a bit into the four P's as we continue our look at energy for now and the future. Many accidents involve energized equipment. Study such matters, get professional help for assessments, and let's keep everyone safe around our energy equipment. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
NIP Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2018, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA, All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Did you say Hairmaster?
No, you dimwit. Airmaster.
Caremaster?
No, Airmaster.
Daremaster?
Clean your ears out. I said Airmaster.
Stairmaster?
Oops, don't try that one. It's probably trademarked by someone else. Airmaster.
Ha ha, got you on that one. I said Stairmaster. S-T-A-R-E, Master. Tearmaster?
I'm going to tear you. Airmaster!
Oh, I get it. Airmaster.
Yes, Airmaster.
But what do they do?
Airmaster Aerator, the patented aerator that makes a difference. More than an aerator, a complete waste treatment system. Airmaster Aerator. The following column was written by Jim Thompson. My name is Steve Roush, and I'll be reading this week's offering for Jim. This week's Nip Impressions column is entitled Energy Shocks, and this is what Jim has to say about that. With various analogies over the years, I have talked about our myopic look at energy issues. Your view of energy production, consumption, and other KPIs related to energy are largely dependent on where you sit and what you read. Often we find this is wrong when the real numbers are placed in front of us. So we are going to travel a little outside our normal realm of the pulp and paper industry this week, hopefully giving you material not only to think about but to challenge you the next time you think you know something, to dig a little bit deeper. Let's start with airline travel, specifically in the United States. By the way, I'll not list my sources here, but unless I otherwise make an exception, I am largely pulling information from Wikipedia. In the United States, airlines carry, normally, over 600 million passengers per year. Takes a lot of fuel, right? Yes, jet fuel consumption in the United States is roughly 76 billion liters per year. That's 1.3 million barrels of oil per day. Of course, jet fuel is a lower grade fuel than avgas, the high octane fuel used in piston engine airplanes. Jet fuel is basically kerosene. Kerosene was developed to replace whale oil for illumination in the mid-1800s. Jim, you're going old fashioned on us. Kerosene lamps? They went out with the horse and buggy. Sorry, dear reader. The current use of kerosene for illumination via lamps is 77 billion liters per year, slightly more than the jet fuel consumption in the United States. As pulp and paper makers, we have an interest in wood consumption, and not necessarily just for energy production. IKEA uses roughly 1% of commercial solid wood produced in the world, not wood for heating or cooking. According to EIA, the U.S. Energy Information Agency, in 2017, approximately 2% of total U.S. annual energy consumption came from wood. This is the same percentage as comes from solar. To be fair, solar is growing rapidly and is considered a quote-unquote high-value source of energy in the form of electricity, while much wood consumption is considered quote-unquote low value because the temperatures produced are relatively low and hence not particularly useful in industrial or heavy commercial uses. Speaking of wood, the country with the most forest land is Russia, over 8 million square kilometers, while Qatar is at the other end. It records zero land covered by forests. Peatlands, yet another source of fuel, cover an amazing 4% of the world's land area. Forests are nominally 30.5% of the world's land area. Some agencies considered peat a renewable energy source. Others do not because of its slow regeneration cycle. As I mentioned last week, energy in the form of oil and natural gas is particularly inexpensive at this point. When oil and natural gas go low, other forms of energy cannot compete. A number of years ago, for instance, we thought pet coke, petroleum coke, was going to be a viable alternative for natural gas. Fracking killed that idea, and pet coke continues to look for a home. It'll be interesting to see where we are a year from now on the viability of various energy forms. Guaranteed, it will be a different picture than what we see today. For safety this week, most forms of energy can harm us if improperly used. Keep up to date on safety procedures, especially if your mill has an exotic energy source. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2018, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Are you facing a complex installation, expansion, greenfield project, or maintenance project? Make the smart choice. C.R. Meyer, a nationwide industrial general contractor, specializes in the pulp and paper industry. Our skilled millwrights, pipe fitters, iron workers, boiler makers, carpenters, laborers, cement finishers, operators, and a team of experienced project managers, architects, and engineers are safe, effective, and efficient on any project, planned or unplanned. Take the smart step toward getting your next project finished safely and done well. Contact C.R. Meyer at crmeyer.com.
The following Nip Impressions column was written by Jim Thompson. This is Steve Roush, and I'll be reading this column for Jim. This week's offering is entitled Energy Data Continued, and here's what Jim has to say about that. One reader last week challenged my citation of Wikipedia stating that the consumption of kerosene for illumination, even today, equals that of the consumption of jet fuel, essentially kerosene, in the United States. If anyone has a solid, better source of data, please share it, and I would be happy to pass it along here in one of the remaining columns this month. In The Economist issue of the 1st through the 7th of December 2018, right on schedule, their technology quarterly special section was titled Towards Zero Carbon, Conquering CO2. The good news, and I believed I read this portion of the magazine fairly carefully, was that the pulp and paper industry was barely cited. Steel and cement manufacturing were the bad boys of the industrial sector. We came in at 0.02 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide emissions, the smallest industry singled out. Their data was from 2014. Steel and cement manufacturing were each over 11 times higher. One matter that is necessary to our function, however, but was not coupled to industry served, was transportation, particularly truck transportation. The challenge is to convert over-the-road trucks to non-petroleum fuels if one's objective is to reduce CO2 emissions. Energy to be used on the move, so to speak, remains elusive if one wants to eliminate the exhaust pipe. Simply, electrical or hydrogen storage systems have not reached the density efficiency represented by gasoline or diesel when it comes to transportation. These economies can be reached with electrified trains, but electrified trains have their own drawbacks for quick delivery, often required between mill and converter or between converter and the ultimate end consumer. Nothing beats the versatility of the truck. In my career, I have seen movement from the requirement that paper mills be on railroad sidings not far from the main line to a condition where mills are built far from the rail and no one seems to care. If they do, it is for the delivery of bulk consumables such as starch, clay, or pigments, not for the delivery of finished product. The lithium-ion battery is the closest we have as a storage device that will compete with petroleum fuels for the energy storage density. However, it suffers some problems, not the least of which is the tendency to ignite into a fierce fire if conditions are not maintained to exacting standards. But to come full circle back to the home, the obvious location of kerosene lamps, to whatever extent they are used, the Economist article has a nice section of the problems of home heating and the prodigious amounts of CO2 produced by this function. As the article points out in the sidebar, Britain uses more energy for heating than for generating electricity or running its transportation system. Of course, the problem here is just like the problem of the kerosene lamp. The quantities consumed per point are relatively small and hence difficult to economically bolt on a capture system. Overall, I think the news for the pulp and paper industry here in 2018 is relatively good. Reaching back into the mid-1970s, energy consumption issues and by association energy emissions have been vigorously attacked by our industry and problems solved to the limits of known technology. We can be proud of our track record. For safety this week, let's focus on those emissions for 1 minute. Carbon monoxide, forget CO2 for a moment, is a deadly silent killer here and now. Over the years, I have known of several sad incidents where this has taken lives. Most threats are observable by direct experience. Carbon monoxide is not, and one must have it top of mind in many situations encountered in our mills. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
Nip Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2018, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.
Oh, excuse me for a minute while I step inside the control room. Ah, that's better. Now, please be patient a few more seconds while we pay the bills.
Well, it's time to start planning our annual recovery boiler outage again.
Yes, it is. Budgets are tighter than ever, even though business is good. And speaking of good business, sales is pressuring us to have as short an outage as possible. They need the production.
Well, getting in a hurry costs money and can lead to safety problems.
I know, and you know we are always under pressure for our safety record, too. It seems like corporate has nothing better to do than to keep pushing us on every front.
I think I have a solution to all of these problems.
What's that?
RMR Mechanical. They've done a great work for us in the past and have a great safety record, too. They almost always beat the schedule.
Sounds like this meeting is over.
RMR Mechanical. The only name you need to know for an economical, quick, and safe boiler outage. Phone 770-205-9646 or visit us on the web at rmrmechanical.com. The following column was written by Jim Thompson. I'm Chuck Swan, reading it for Jim. Jim's column is entitled, Where It Started. And here's what he has to say. Until about 1712, humankind depended largely on human and animal exertion for work. There was the occasional water-power dam and, in parts of the world, windmills, but these were specifically location-dependent. Thomas Newcomen freed work from location and muscle with the invention of his atmospheric steam engine around 1712. There had been precursors to this invention, but Newcomen is credited with the first practical design. This was only 300 years ago, a mere dash in time when compared to all of human history. These engines were used to dewater mines. Mines were the womb of many early industrial inventions, for at the time, mines were the focal point of non-agricultural activities. Mines, for instance, were the developing launching points for what later became the railroad track and railroad carriage systems. Newcomen's engine did not produce a continuous rotating force. It was a rocker arm assembly designed to duplicate the action produced by a human operating a hand pump in a water well, something you may have seen in an agricultural museum or on your grandparents' farm. James Watt's steam engine, developed between 1763 and 1781, was the first practical steam engine producing rotating power and was a tremendous energy saver compared to the Newcomen and other early designs. Matthew Boulton was also instrumental in the creative design evolution at this point, and often the engines were called Boulton and Watt engines. Due to their size and number of necessary attendants, steam engines were located in a central location in the developing design of factories and transmitted their power by line shafts to the points of use. This style of power transmission was often used and still exists to this day. The old West Vaco Mill at Wickliffe, Kentucky, dating from around 1970, had several steam turbines, not piston-style engines, in its design. This mill has been recently rechristened the Phoenix Mill by its new owners. The machine was driven by a line shaft with a turbine, as were the vacuum and fan pumps. This unusual configuration at this late date was an economical one. The mill drew electrical power from the Tennessee Valley Authority at a low price, hence installing electrical generation capacity was not economically justified. What to do with high-pressure steam under these economic conditions? Run it through steam turbines scattered throughout the mill. In 1984, we removed the line shaft and installed sectional DC drives, state-of-the-art for the time. The electric motor freed paper mills and other factories from line shafts. While DC, direct current motors, came first, the AC, alternating current motor, was largely the brainchild of Nikola Tesla. Practical versions came into widespread use just over 100 years ago. In the early days, there were no standards for voltage or frequency in AC systems, as there was no widespread power grid. Paper mills with a long history, such as the one at Covington, Virginia, also a former West Vaco mill, now part of West Rock, had motors wound to match the frequency and voltage they used, and as recently as the early 1980s, was still requiring specially produced motors because of the heritage of their electrical systems. I do not know their situation today. If anyone does and has the permission to let us know, please respond at the bottom of this column. So look at the complexity of our power and control systems today. Recognize the engineering expertise, the standards development, and all the myriad details that go into a modern paper mill energy and control system. For those early in their careers, I hope this little column will offer an appreciation for how quickly we have come from the invention of the steam engine 300 years ago and the practical electric motor 100 years ago to the point we are today, efficiently harnessing energy and controlling the emissions generated by its production. For safety this week, energy sources are fraught with danger. Training and an appreciation for the power generated is necessary for continued safety. Be safe, and we will talk next week.
NIP Impressions is written by Jim Thompson and is copyright 2018, Paparitalo Publications, Duluth, Georgia, USA. All rights reserved.